former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a bettor. And here we are on the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. A part of the DraftKings Network pregame power-up airs every single Sunday, 8 to 1 p.m. Eastern time here. Three shows, 5 hours, getting you set with everything you need. It's an all-you-can-eat buffet of football content leading up to kickoff later on this afternoon. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how are we doing today? It's been a while since we've done a Sunday gig together.
Yeah, no, Stormy's been catching those flights, but today she was stuck out there at James Madison, and then she was in Coastal Carolina. That was a route. She should have left in the third quarter. That thing was over quick. Anyway, what a day in college football, huh?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. The Michigan Ohio State appetizer, the Auburn Alabama. Thank God Bill Berman called Nick Saban at halftime, got that thing straightened out. Let's see. Washington, the Apple Cup was great. I even thought Florida State, Florida, Georgia, Georgia Tech. I mean, there was some incredible games. And how about our man Matt Eumanns? I mean, he loves those nightcaps. The man doesn't sleep at all. He takes Hawaii and San Diego State in the last game of Brady Hoke's career at San Diego State. And he covers. I mean, it's impressive. It was impressive. What a fun day, though. Really was.
I mean, it was rivalry Saturday. We were talking about it yesterday at this time. You're building up to it. It's like, hey, like, we know these underdogs, they tend to be a little bit more alive in these rivalry games because a lot of them are instant rivalries. These kids know each other. And we saw that. I mean, Michigan Ohio State was just an unbelievable game. The atmosphere was insane there. Always is in Ann Arbor or Columbus. But Michigan going ahead and clinching the Big Ten East. And then the Apple Cup, like, that was the one that's near and dear to my heart. I'm watching that game. And we talked about it yesterday. I said, hey, just be careful here. Like, Washington might be in a little bit of trouble. Cam Ward, depending on what you get from Washington State, they could be very frisky in this game. And boy, they looked live through a lot of that game there. The Huskies end up pulling it out there with a late field goal there at the end, though.
And a horrible pass and a horrible rough in the passer call, too, right?
That was brutal.
And a horrible play call for Penix to get sacked to push him even further back in field goal range. I mean, that was. They did not manage that game, although the fourth down call was brilliant. You know, they got that eagle formation and they ran outside. The cameraman was faked out completely. But look, I mean, the story of the day is Auburn, Alabama. The season's on the brink. Mm-hmm. You know, Auburn's pulling the upset of all upsets. And, you know, the last play of the game off of the bad snap, I felt so bad for that center. But, you know, it's funny. When one thing goes wrong early in the season and you never get it fixed, it always creeps its ugly head at the wrong time, right? And that's what's happened with the center exchange at Alabama. It showed up, and now we got a 4th and 21 from the 21 or whatever 30, it
31,
was.
31, yeah.
31. And Nick, and Nick's right. He, I'm sure they practice that situation where you've got to throw it to a certain spot in the back of the end zone. But what I don't understand is, you know, everybody said, well, they didn't rush three. Tackle in college football, if you're unsure whether you're going to make the play on the ball, just tackle the guy.
Yep.
Just tackle the guy. It's only a 15-yard penalty. Tackle them. Just tackle them. You know, and for all the times Alabama's had to go back to Tuscaloosa with one of those, how did that just happen? They finally got one.
Yeah, I mean, Saban said it after the game. He said, weird stuff happens here at Jordan-Hare. Like, that's just a place, like, late November, you don't want to have to go there. Alabama has to go there each and every year, or at least every other year for the Iron Bowl. But, I mean, what a throw by Jalen Milroe, by the way. I mean, like, hash to go to the corner there just on a frozen rope. Like Milroe's got some big-time talent there, and, like, he's gotten a lot better. Like, that's one of the better stories of the college football season is just his improvement going from being benched to now being the quarterback of this Alabama team that – who knows what happens next Saturday when they take on Georgia in the SEC title game. That's going to be one heck of a game as well. So it's I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, as Nick said after the game, they're going to have to play a lot better, right? They're going to have to play a lot better. And, you know, and then there's no guarantee they get into the Final Four. For some reason, the committee's hanging the loss to Texas over their head. They played Texas again. I think they beat Texas. I really do. Whether they played them in Austin or played it in Tuscaloosa, I think they would win. So, you know, to me, Washington looks like the most vulnerable team. If they don't win, you know, with one loss, they're out. The other one is Ohio State, right? This is the second time in a row Ohio State's going to be peeking on the outside, not having to play a game, and maybe getting into the Final Four. I mean, like, seriously, what's wrong with the path there? That's something wrong with that, right?
Feels like it. It feels like it, especially after last year when they got their brains beat in by Michigan, and then they said, like, oh, here you go. Welcome to the playoff. And there's
yeah,
a
yeah, come on in.
There's
yeah,
a scenario. Come on in. Like if Washington loses, if Texas loses, if Alabama loses, you start looking around, and there's that Buckeye. There's that Buckeye.
And then right they get to the, I mean, they lose the biggest game of the year, and then they get in it. I mean, it makes no sense at all. It really doesn't. Yeah. I mean, look, it was a tough loss, but they had a chance with 7 minutes to go in the game. They got a chance to get the ball back. They couldn't get the ball back.
Yeah, no, and I thought that at times they actually did show some toughness, that drive there, that when they went ahead and tied the game up at 17, and it was Travion Henderson who went ahead and ran it in for the touchdown. Like, they looked like they were ready to answer the bell, but Michigan, credit them, they made the big plays when they had to with the game-sealing interception there. So we talked about college football. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense with what the committee is going to do. That will be a conversation for another day. Let's talk about what makes sense actually here, Michael, which is the National Football League. And one of my favorite Bill Parcells quotes, we've talked about this quite a bit here, but I just love when he says it. He says, you find out who you are around Thanksgiving. Well, we've reached Thanksgiving. And do you feel like you kind of have a good feel for what these contending teams are doing, what some of the second tier teams are doing? Or do you think that these next 6 weeks or so are still going to give us some more answers?
No, I think we know who we are. I mean, we'll know a lot. I mean, I think Kansas City knows who they are, and they have to adjust accordingly. They're a good defensive team that has to maximize their offensive ability and pick their spots and try to just complete passes, know that they're going to have to be methodical. You know, Buffalo kind of knows who they are. They need Josh Allen. This is the time of the day where, you know, Josh, we got 7 games to go. You got to take over. Denver clearly has followed the Parcells path. I'm not saying Denver's a Super Bowl team, but certainly Denver understands who they are, and they built their team around how they have to play. It's really what Parcells is saying is, here's how we have to play to win. Like, and Mike Tomlin's been doing this all year, right?
Yep.
Whether Matt Canada is the offensive coordinator or not, they're going to play their style of how they have to play. I think Sean McVay can do it too. The problem is, once he loses some pieces, he can't do it. And then there's some teams that can. I think the most interesting game on the slate starts at 1 o'clock down in Houston with Jacksonville, because here's what we know. We know that Trevor Lawrence is better on the road throwing. We know that Trevor Lawrence has struggled. He struggles against teams that like to play zone. The teams that, when you look at what they do in terms of how they match up, what they do. I mean, Lawrence by the South, okay? Houston's a zone team. This year and last year, they were a zone team. And the year before with David Culley, because Lovie Smith was the defense coordinator, they're a zone team. 1-4 straight up against Houston, okay? 3-2 against straight up against Tennessee, 2-3 against the spread. And then he's 4-2, 5-1 against Indianapolis. He struggles when he has to play against that. When he's on the road, there lies the problem. They have no run game. This is a game where you say, well, Jacksonville has to win. But I think this Houston's a very formidable opponent. And I think C.J. Stroud, who moved the ball up and down the field against the Cardinals, turned it over 3 times in the red area, will move the ball again today.
Yeah, the red zone's been kind of a little bit of like a bugaboo situation for the Houston Texans. They've gone down there and had quite a bit of miscues. You mentioned it against the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals could have won that game at the end of that one there. But the Cardinals, Kyler Murray, he wasn't all the way dialed in with some of his throws to those receivers as well. I can't wait to watch that game, because first place in the AFC South is on the line. In terms of the betting market right now, Jacksonville is a 1.5-point favorite on the road over at DraftKings. The total's at 48. That total's been getting bet to the over all throughout the week. We'll break that game down more in more in depth coming up a little bit later on, but I wanted to get to the most bet games. Jags Texans is the third most bet game of the day over at DraftKings. The number one most bet game, Michael, is the Chiefs at the Raiders. And the big news with that game yesterday evening, as I'm getting ready to go to bed, all of a sudden I see all the insiders blasting with the notifications of, hey, Max Crosby's really pushing to play despite being listed as doubtful earlier in the week. Like, is this a situation where Crosby, with the knee injury, the bye week is coming up, should we expect him to play at Allegiant Stadium later this afternoon? The market thinks so, as this has come down from the 10s, now sitting as low as 8.5.
Well, when the news broke, it went right back up to 10, then it came back down to 8.5 again. I think he'll play. I think he'll try to play, let's say that. But last week he tried to play with it too, and he wasn't effective on it. You know, he really wasn't the dominant force that he typically is in games against the Miami offensive line, which he should have dominated. This game is going to be difficult. If he doesn't play, how do they stop the Raiders? The Raiders are going to play bend but don't break like they did against Miami. Don't give up the big play. Don't give up any chunk yards. Make them get into third down. Make it a third down game. And when you look at this, you know, they can still, I mean, as bad as Kansas City has played the last 3 weeks in terms of no points in the second half, I still think they will move the football effectively on the Raiders. My concern is in this game is for the Raiders offensively. Mm-hmm. How do they move the ball? How do they block a team like Kansas City who averages 4.7 opponent yards per play? You know, they're 0.275 in opponent points per play. That's significant, right? And so they take away the run game, Josh Jacobs. They're going to force the ball into Aiden O'Connell's hand. And how are they going to really attack this Kansas City defense, which we've seen Miami have a hard time attacking, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen the Chargers move it, but then they stop when they have to do it. And it's a very challenge. It's a huge challenge. Philadelphia did not move the ball at all on them either, even though Philly won the game. So my problem is when I look at this game, I say, okay, 8.5. All right, I think Kansas City's still going to score 27 points. Can the Raiders score 20? And I'm not sure they can, Sammy.
Yeah, I don't think they can either in this game. And we'll get into our picks and all that stuff a little bit later on when we run down the board to wrap up the show here. But looking at that number, I feel like we're sitting at 10 if Marquez Valdes-Scantling just simply catches the football Monday night. Right. like I think that's kind of like the little bit of an overreaction to the Eagles.
Or if they don't turn it over twice in the red zone last week.
Yep. Yeah. I think maybe getting just a slight discount here on the Kansas City Chiefs on what is a discount
weekend.
You're
getting a significant discount.
Yeah. Well, we will get into all the games, including Sunday night football coming up next year. The Ravens at the Chargers. We're just getting warmed up on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't become a VSiN Pro subscriber yet, we're giving you one last chance to sign up on our best deal of the year. Sign up on our Black Friday special today and get a VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through May 1st for only $60. It includes daily best bets, unlimited access to our exclusive betting splits, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus all our betting guides and best bets for the upcoming College Bowls, Super Bowl, and March Madness. This offer expires on November 30th, so start betting smarter today. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. To sign up on our Black Friday special now, that's VSIN.com/subscribe. It's a week 12 edition of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi here on this Sunday. And before we get into our official kickoff of our game previews here, I wanted to give out some of the notable players who have been ruled out so far ahead of the actives and inactives, which will drop in about an hour and 15 minutes. Obviously, Joe Burrow for the Cincinnati Bengals, he's now on IR. But T. Higgins as well for Cincinnati will not be playing in this game. For Pittsburgh, Minkah Fitzpatrick has already been ruled out. Levante David has been ruled out. Dallas Goedert, the Eagles tight end, also has been ruled out, obviously, with his injury. No Kadarius Toney for the Chiefs, and then no Denzel Ward for the Cleveland Browns. And most notably for the game that we're about to preview here, Michael, no Mark Andrews for the Baltimore Ravens, their star tight end. And that's where we will begin this week 12 preview. Ravens, 3-point favorites on the road against the Los Angeles Chargers. Michael, the betting market has a lot of interest on the Chargers this week. This was about 4, then it went down to 3.5. Now we're sitting here at 3 across the board here. Do you agree with this move here, or is this maybe a chance to lay it with the Ravens in primetime?
Well, I think this. Look, the Chargers typically play close games, right? And mm-hmm. You can't ever underestimate the Chargers' ability to throw the football effectively. And the Ravens have struggled against good quarterback passing. I mean, we saw Deshaun Watson throw the football effectively on them. You know, we were able to see them do, you know, they moved the ball. I know they beat Cincinnati, but Joe Burrow was actually throwing the football on them. When they face somebody that can throw it. Now, you know, Detroit comes into Baltimore. They couldn't throw it. They played really well in that game. This will be, you know, for the lack of a better way, this will be one of the better quarterbacks that they've faced all season, and it'll be a great test. They only give up 5.5 yards per pass attempt. I mean, that's pretty impressive, but you have to go back through and look at who they've actually played at quarterback, right? Watson, they played Burrow for a little bit, mm-hmm. and then Jake Browning came in. Geno wasn't very good. They didn't play against Kyler Murray. They played against Josh Dobbs, who wasn't playing well. It played against Goff and then Tennessee. You know, it was Tannehill, Pittsburgh, it's Pickett, Cleveland, it was Watson again, and Indianapolis, it's Minshew. So, well, it was Minshew and they lost to him. So Burrow, when Burrow wasn't healthy, and then they played C.J. Stroud. So they haven't played anybody that you'd say, okay, this offense is going to click and it's going to be dynamic. So I think that's why. And we know the Chargers can play kind of in close games. They can't win close games, but they play in close games. When it was 3.5, I really thought it was a good play for the Chargers because, you know, you're getting that hook and you have a feeling, you know, when Herbert's an underdog of 3 points or more, he's 10-4 against the spread. So, you know, it's good. And this year he's 5-1 in that situation. So you like that. And I think that's something why people see it. I think it's always going to be a close game. No home field advantage. I don't know how many Raven fans will be out there, but I think this is going to be one of those. What you worry about if it's a close game, right, it's that second half where the Chargers have not been able to, with Herbert making the adjustments. I mean, all you really need to know about the Brendan Staley administration is Herbert is 18-37-5 against the spread in the second half. That's adjustments, Pat. That's adjustments right there, Femi.
Yeah, I mean, that's a telling stat right there. It just goes to show you that maybe from an in-game betting standpoint, let's say the Chargers are up, you can maybe come back and go ahead and play some Baltimore Ravens at an underdog price here. For the Ravens defensively, you mentioned how they haven't played all those quarterbacks. That's reflected in the numbers as well. They rank in the top three in points per game allowed, passing yards per game, and also in the total yards per game allowed as well. So this Ravens defense, Mike McDonald, he's done a terrific job. But when it's Herbert, it's a little bit different of an animal. But with that said, Michael, this Chargers offense, they don't make a whole lot of explosive plays. And I don't know whether it's the drops. Like last week, obviously, they had the drops. That was the big story. But even before then, they've struggled to really push the ball down the field ever since they lost Mike Williams for the season.
And that's been the case all along. That's why they drafted Quentin Johnston. That's why they drafted him, because they know they needed him to come in there and get, because last year when they lost Williams, they knew they needed him to come in and make plays. And unfortunately, he hasn't been able to be successful doing it. I mean, his catch percentage is only 58.8%. You know, he can't, and which really bad is the fact that he averages 9.2 yards per catch, per reception. I mean, that's not what they drafted him for. They drafted him for the explosive vertical speed down the field, which hasn't manifested itself so far. He's a one-route runner. He's not a in and out runner. He's a, I got to take off and fly down the field. You know, Williams was averaging 13.1, and he was, you know, and he was getting 83 yards per game this season. And so when you lose that, that's hard. And he had a 73% catch percentage. So think about it, Femi. You've dropped down significantly in the catch percentage, right? Mm-hmm. You've dropped down 83 yards to whatever you can get, 16, 18 yards from Quentin Johnston. Where is that 50 yards coming from? It can only come from Keenan Allen, right?
Yeah.
And then when you know, you got to take Keenan Allen out of the game, and then where's Herbert going to throw the football? There lies the problem. Herbert does a great job protecting the ball. He's only thrown 5 interceptions all season. The problem is where else, who else is going to make an explosive play? And against a Baltimore team, you're going to need one, because it's hard to put 10, 12, 15 plays in a row of good plays together, especially if you're getting a lot of third downs.
Yeah. And this is a very, very meaningful game for both of these teams. Chargers trying to stay in the AFC wildcard race. And for Baltimore, they're thinking about maybe one seed and potentially being able to host playoff games in the month of January. Right now, they are tied with the Miami Dolphins for that number one seed. Kansas City also at 3 losses, as is Jacksonville and Cleveland. So the race for the AFC number one seed is going to be hot and heavy coming down the stretch here. Let's stay, though, in your neck of the woods over there in Jersey. The New York Giants host the New England Patriots. And for those of you who did not see our show yesterday, you made this your Hall & Oates play of the week here, the Giants hosting New England. And the betting market, though, has been interested in the road favorite. The Patriots now out to 4.5-point favorites. This was around 3.5 yesterday. Now we've moved to 4.5. The total still sitting at 35.5, 34, I believe, in some spots there. Is this an indication that we'll see Mac Jones behind center here for New England?
Yeah, I mean, I've said all week that I thought the problem that Bill Belichick has in terms of who's going to be the starter is he can't get Bailey Zappe to practice or play well enough to beat Mac Jones out. That's the sad commentary of their situation at quarterback. I mean, Mac's there for beating out. He can't do it. They brought Will Greer in. Will Greer couldn't do it. you know, you got to be able to take the job. Belichick's not going to hand you the job. You got to have to practice and play well enough to command the huddle. And obviously Zappe, which I've never thought he could. I am shocked this line. So all week I monitor the lines. Every day I go through and put a different color on where the lines are going, and I kind of predict where it might go. About Wednesday, this trended from 3.5 back to 3. Mm-hmm. And it stayed there for a little while. And then New England was not getting very much of the betting. They had about 17% of the money coming in on them at that point, based on a lot of offshore and onshore markets, not just DraftKings, pretty much all the markets through ever. And then the last few days, Saturday and Sunday, the money has come pouring in on New England. I mean, it's come pouring in. They were at 18% on Monday of the money. They went to 20% on Tuesday. They went to 17% on Wednesday. And then on Friday, they went back up to 19% of the money. Okay, so Thursday obviously was Thanksgiving, so I didn't count that in there. Today they're up to 24% of the money. But the reality here is it's all respected money, if you will, people that mm-hmm. do this for a living, and that's why the number's moving. I mean, right now the ticket count on all the markets is 66% in favor of the Giants. The money count is 76% of the Giants. But the reality of it is the Patriots are getting that professional money. And frankly, when you go back and watch the Washington game with six turnovers, and you know, Washington still had a chance to win the game if they could have just put together one drive and not turn it over. So the Patriots will play this pretty well. And DeVito's gonna have to throw the ball effectively into coverage where there's somebody covered. Last week against the Washington, nobody was covered.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably more of an indictment about the Washington Commanders, which they have since now fired their defensive coordinator, Jack Del Rio. We're looking at the DraftKings betting splits right now here. 42% of the handle is on the New England Patriots as opposed to the 58% on the Giants. But like we mentioned, the money and the line at least is going in favor of New England. So while it's not all the money, it's definitely respected and influential money that has come in on the Patriots here in this spot. I think you had it right putting this as a Hall & Oates play. Like, I don't want any part of taking the points here with DeVito, and I don't want to lay 4.5 with New England's offense that has just not been consistent.
I don't
want to
lay 4.5 with Mac Jones either. I don't want to think. Like, but here's what we do know. We do know this. When these lines move as much as they move, all of a sudden, you know, it favors the team that the line moved away from. Right. Yeah. When you move 3 points in another direction, you know, it's kind of it favors that team. So you have to be very careful. The dog, the favorite one, like, you know, when Cincinnati was a dog, the favorite. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah. We'll also talk about the AFC South showdown down in Houston.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up on our Black Friday special now and get access to everything we do through May 1st for only $60 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We are rolling along here on the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network here, part of our fun coverage here for the pregame power-up, which is 5 hours of nonstop NFL coverage leading up to kickoff. Brent Musburger's countdown to kickoff will be following us here starting at noon Eastern, leading up to kickoff at 1 o'clock Eastern time here. But Michael, let's continue with the game. Semi of MFA, Michael Lombardi here with you guys on this Sunday. And we'll go with the game down in Houston, the AFC South showdown, first place in the division on the line heading into the final month of the season. The Jaguars right now, 1.5 point road favorites, total sitting at 48. And our producer Elliot Bowman was telling us about this during the break. The Jaguars have covered the spread in 9 straight road or neutral site games, which is tied for the longest streak in NFL history. So the road warrior Jaguars now laying road chalk here against Houston.
And they're 7-3 straight up in the last 10 games. They've done a really good job, right? And one thing we do know, Lawrence is 13-20 straight up as an underdog. but he's 10-8 straight up since the start of last year, since he got Doug Peterson back. So, and the other thing is, and I've documented this, he plays much better, averages 8.1 yards per attempt on the road as to 6.7 at home. For some reason, he doesn't play well at home. And for another reason, I think what happens to him is, you know, they don't play effectively. They get behind and they can't get going. You say, well, the last time, what happened? The last time their special teams really let them down. You know, they get behind 17-0 in the first half. They basically turn the ball over. They go for it on their classic fourth down. They don't get it. They give Houston good field position, and Houston makes some plays. I mean, when you watch this Jacksonville secondary, they will struggle against good throwers. They struggle against good passing teams. I mean, San Francisco threw for 293 against them. The Chiefs threw for 298. The Colts threw for 310 in the second game against them at home, naturally. And so, you know, they're 3-2 in games, and those games, in the games where they play lesser quarterbacks, Pickett, Richardson, Ritter, Levis, they win those games. When they play against a good thrower like what C.J. Stroud's been able to demonstrate, it's really been difficult. And where they've been bailed out, Jacksonville defensively, has been on third down. They're the second best third down team. So for this game, Lawrence has got to play really well. I could see where the overs start to come in, because I think both teams will move the football effectively on one another through the air. Pierce may play today. They say he's going to be a game time decision. He's supposed to play. Jacksonville doesn't mind throwing it 40 times because they can't run the football. They're the opposite of Washington. They try to run it. They try to run it, but they can't. They're 28th in yards per attempt. So this game will be in the air. And against zone coverage, like I said earlier, Lawrence has struggled. This will be an all zone game by Houston.
I want to go back to what you said about Trevor Lawrence and his home road splits. Do you think, is that just random and based on the competition, or is there something kind of deeper behind why he struggles at home and why he's actually played pretty well away from Jacksonville?
Yeah, I can't put my finger on it. You know, it's kind of interesting how he just doesn't seem to, you know, and he plays fairly well against good competition.
Yeah.
I mean, when he plays against teams with over 500 record, he's a pretty good player. He seems to match that. He matched the level of comp. But for this year, he's been really at home. He's been off target. He's gotten a lot of pressure. He hasn't been able to make classic throws. And then when he goes on the road, whether it's in New Orleans or whether it's over in Germany against the Bills secondary, or, you know, or anywhere else, or Indianapolis in the first game, that he throws the ball really effectively. So again, it's about, if you're going to play him in zone, he's going to have some trouble reading it out, and he's going to have some trouble making throws.
Yeah, we'll look out for that as the X's and O's matchup in this game here. Once again, a big game in terms of the AFC South standings right now. The Texans just one game behind Jacksonville. Jags 7-3, Houston 6-4. But like we mentioned, Houston beat them down in Jacksonville earlier this season. So this could be for the season tiebreaker here if Houston's able to complete the sweep.
I think this too, Femi, when you really study them, and I went through them this week and watched them, he's had 56 passes. When you go through the numbers, and I've watched pretty much all the games, but if you go to Pro Football Reference, they keep track of what they call off-target throws, right? Mm-hmm. He's had 56 off-target throws. That's fifth in the National Football League. And that's in the same company as Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, Kenny Pickett, Mac Jones, and Zach Wilson. That's not where you want to be. And there lies a lot of the problem. His footwork and his mechanics, for all the conversation about, well, he's gotten better with Doug, it really hasn't happened. He's only been over 9 yards per game once in his career. Once. He's had 23 games below 7 yards per attempt. 23 games.
Wow.
This has not been generational. He's been good, but it hasn't been generational. And there's been a little bit of a covering of his play because Peterson has kind of polished it up, but it really hasn't. It hasn't been to the level that you think, oh my gosh, this guy is, you know, he's the next Patrick Mahomes. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of billed as the second coming, dating back to his time at Clemson. And you saw the stats up there for our viewing audience. I mean, it was 11 touchdown passes so far through 10 games. Like, that's not very impressive when you look at what some other quarterbacks are doing in the league right now there. So that's
Let me ask you something, Femi. When you see it, like, this is the second game for the Houston Texans they got a three-game homestand. Well, in baseball, three-game homestand's great, right? You know, you try to that middle game. What do you think the record is of the teams in that middle game?
Ooh, I would say that they're winning at probably like a 60% clip around that range, being at home in that second game.
They're 58-29 straight up, 51-35 against the spread.
Wow. So
pretty profitable, right?
Pretty impressive. Pretty profitable indeed there. And this is the chance for the Houston Texans to take advantage of this homestand here. Like the schedule, when you look at them, it's not the most difficult schedule. If they can get this win, then you host Denver in a game. Then a couple weeks you get at the Jets. It doesn't sound like Rodgers will be back for that one. That'll probably be Timmy Boyle or Zach Wilson at quarterback.
Stop. Stop. We're not talking about that. Come on.
I mean, I was just saying that's part of the conversation in the NFL this month is going to be the return of Aaron Rodgers there. So I guess whether you like it or love it or hate it, you're going to have to listen to it at some point. Let's go to the NFC South, though, here, Michael. The Saints and the Falcons. This is an interesting betting market because it's hung out around 1.5 for much of the week. Now the Saints have gotten bet out to as much as 2.5. 2 seems to be the consensus number. 41.5 is our total.
Yeah, and this is your game. You should be handicapped. You're the Dennis Allen expert. He's 5-13-2 against divisional opponents against the spread. You want him today in the delay in the points?
Not a chance.
You know, do you want that? I mean,
not a chance.
To me, Atlanta's the most confusing team of all. And I'm on Atlanta. I like Atlanta here today. But they're confusing. They're painful to watch. You know, I mean, when you break down this game, you're sitting here and you're watching Atlanta play on tape and you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, what are they doing here? Well, I don't get this. So let me get this straight. Both Desmond Ridder and Algier have the same exact amount of carries. Okay, that bothers me, right? They both have 100 and they both have the same number of carries, identical, right? One guy's gained 612 yards on those carries. The other guy's gained 402. And yet they're giving them the same amount of carries. It makes no sense to me at all. And so, like, I want to like them. When they go into Arizona is one of the worst defenses in football in terms of pressuring the passer, allowing yards per pass play, all the things that happen. And they don't throw it. They run it. He only gains 70 yards passing in the game with Taylor Heineke. I don't get it. Now, look, last year they beat them twice. They beat them 27-26 in the opener. The Saints did. Remember that game? Atlanta got off to a huge, and the Saints came roaring back. And then off the bye week, just like this, the Saints won 21-18 in New Orleans. So, look, I don't trust Carr. I don't trust Allen. I have a hard time with Atlanta, but I keep waiting for Atlanta to play better, especially at home. You know, when the Saints go on the road, there are times where they have not played well. Mm-hmm. You know, they lose by 3 in Carolina. Think about that. I mean, they won by 3 in Carolina. They lost by a point in Green Bay. They lost 20-13 to the Texans and turned the ball over, shouldn't have. They beat Miami, and then they lost to Minnesota pretty badly. So this will be an interesting game. I the guy that I like in this game is Patterson. They got to get Patterson going too. Like, Algier should be standing next to Arthur Smith, and it should be Patterson and Robinson. Patterson's only had 17 carries this year.
Yeah, they haven't really used him a bunch. The only game they used him was when Robinson wasn't available to play in the Tampa game when he had the headache. So it's very puzzling, the usage for a lot of these guys. I mean, try to get Drake London and Kyle Pitts involved as well. Like, those guys are your big-time guys that you drafted high. It's like, if you're going to draft these guys high, you need to use them because they were talented in college. Like, let's go ahead and see what they can do here at the NFL level. But like you said, this is never the Saints for me. This is Falcons or pass. Maybe it's the Falcons in a teaser to get them up to 8 or something around there. Perhaps we have that in the works over for Betsgiving. We'll be back to recap some of these more games and get you set to go with the Steelers and the Bengals here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's so much to be thankful for: family, friends, food, and NFL football all week long. DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping your Thanksgiving week full of action. New customers can bet just $5 on the NFL to score 150 instantly in bonus bets. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. You can see us over on Samsung TV, Roku, Zumo Play, obviously on the DraftKings Network, as well as on VSiN.com for those of you who subscribe to us at VSiN.com/subscribe. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi here. Week 12, Sunday morning, getting you set for all these games that are about to kick off, six of them in the early window. And we'll get to the one in Cincinnati, Michael, where the Bengals' first game without Joe Burrow, who's out for the rest of the season. Jake Browning will be starting at quarterback, and the Bengals are 2.5-point underdogs with a total of 36.5 over at DraftKings, and a little bit of weather expected as well, with chance of some light showers over there in the Cincinnati area.
You know, this is going to be an interesting game for Zach Taylor, because you cannot run Joe Burrow's offense with Jake Browning. You just can't do that, right? There's just no way, because they put so much pressure on the quarterback in Zach's offense for the quarterback to be successful. For example, you know, they're fourth in passing attempts this year, the Cincinnati Bengals. They're 31st in rushing attempts. They're 26th in yards per attempt. They're 30th in yards period, right? And even though they haven't thrown the ball effectively this year, partly because Higgins has been hurt, they're 26 in yards per attempt. So they're going to have to figure out a way to reshape their offense, right? And try to run the football. You can't do it out of 11 personnel. You can't do it in shotgun. You just can't. I mean, mixing with Burrow behind him, you know, has averaged, really, he hasn't had a very good season. He averaged about 60 yards a game at 4.0 a carry. So what are we going to do? How do we make this run game? How do we take some of the pressure off of Jake Browning? Because if it's plug and play, even with Joe Burrow, they haven't been great. Now, since the bye week, yes, they've been better. Certainly San Francisco, they were great. In Buffalo, they moved the football effectively. But, you know, against Houston, they moved it, but they couldn't stop Houston. The issues now for Zach Taylor is simply this. We got to figure out a way to move the football with Jake Browning. And we got to figure out a way to play better defense, because if we don't turn the ball over with our defense, if we don't get interceptions, we're not going to be able to win the game. They're 28th and third down. Last week against Baltimore, they could not create an interception. They lost 34-20, right? They gave up 405 yards to Baltimore. Houston put 544 on them. I mean, not that Pittsburgh's a great team, but when Pittsburgh can run the football against you, when Pittsburgh can run the ball with runs, whether it's Warren or Najee Harris, they're an effective team. I'm not saying they're great. Don't get me wrong. They're not going to be they're not the 2000 Rams here, but they can be an effective team. And, you know, when you look at it, in the last 4 weeks, the Bengals have allowed 431 yards on the ground. They're going to run the football against them, which sets up play action. And if Pickett doesn't turn the ball over, I have a hard time seeing how Cincinnati wins the game.
Yeah, and it'll be a new play caller for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Sullivan, the quarterback's coach, will be calling the plays. He was assisted by Eddie Faulkner during the week, kind of getting the game plan together ever since Matt Canada was fired, the offensive coordinator. And I don't know if you saw the report there. I think it was Adam Schefter at ESPN reported it yesterday, saying that there was some locker room arguments between Deontay Johnson and Minkah Fitzpatrick there. And like TJ Watt and Cam Hayward had to separate the guys and like kind of preach the message of, hey, we need to stick together. We're 6-4. Like, we got to stick together the rest of the way here. It sounds like there was a lot of frustration brewing in that Steelers locker room. Maybe it had to do with the play caller being Matt Canada and what the offense wasn't doing, to where potentially maybe they can go ahead and galvanize this thing and get it rolling in the last 5-6 weeks here.
Well, I mean, look, they lost to Jacksonville at home. They scored 10 points, right? They held Jacksonville to 20, and, you know, they couldn't win that. They held a backup quarterback for Cleveland to basically 10 points, won the game on a last second field goal, you know, and they lost that game. So, like, when they lose these games, they're losing them because they're not getting any cooperation from the offense. They scored 7 points against San Francisco. They scored, you know, 6 points against Houston. They scored 10 points against Jacksonville. They scored 10 points against Cleveland. It gets frustrating for you in the locker room. Mm-hmm. It becomes a conflict. And so, you know, that's why I think Mike really had to kind of step in and do something. It's the same thing that happened in the Jets locker room. I mean, the players, they call the player-only meeting. You know, they're looking for something to change within the framework of their team. It's a challenge. This should be the perfect game. The perfect game for the Steelers, because they're going against a team that was once a very good defense that is not the same defense. That's just not. They can't stop anybody on the ground. They give up big plays. And if you protect the passer, they've got 12 interceptions, you're going to make plays on them. You really are. And you can run the ball. And when you can run the ball on a defense like the Steelers can, it opens up so many things. I think the Steelers play well today. I really do.
You do. Well, it's sitting at 2.5 right now, which is not the most expensive price, at least if you just think about it just from this week perspective in a vacuum. Obviously, this line was going to be 5.5 or 6 if Burrow was playing. We've swung to now Pittsburgh being the favorite. But I want to ask you this here, because the fallen hero theory tends to be a thing in the NFL, to where usually when a star player gets hurt, the first game back, the team rises to the occasion. Other guys pick up the slack here for Cincinnati. Do you think that that could be a potential situation to where, yes, for over the long haul, the Bengals are probably cooked with Burrow out, but in this particular game, do you think you get an A-plus effort from the Bengals trying to kind of save their season, which is on the ropes clearly?
Well, I mean, look, Browning at Washington finished 6th in the Heisman the year of his senior season. He didn't get drafted. Kind of has bounced around, went to Minnesota as a college free agent, ended up here at there. You know, this summer, you know, I just want to remind Jet fans, he beat out Trevor Siemian for the backup job in Cincinnati. They signed Trevor Siemian with the idea he was going to be the backup. And Browning did it really basically with a average preseason. He averaged 6.2 yards per attempt. He had 2 interceptions, you know, 1 touchdown pass. But he ran the football effectively. He had 6 runs for 55 yards. So, I mean, that gives some hope. I just don't know how you can put the burden of responsibility of the offense on this young man's shoulders. You just can't. You have to have more balance. Run the football.
Oh, bless
you. Excuse me, Femi.
No, bless you.
You've got to be able to run the ball. You got to be able to do different things. You can't line up in 11, shotgun, offset back, and let Burrow run the game like they have. I mean, it just doesn't work. And this offensive line is not great either. I know they put money into it, but they don't play well. They don't run block at all. And as the year goes on and the pad level becomes higher, teams like Cincinnati, you know, which are not a physical team in the offensive front, they become less physical and less physical as we move forward.
Yeah, well, Pittsburgh right now in a good position to go ahead and get a road division win right now. 2.5-point favorites. We'll see if that goes to 3 there. I think we might just hang out here at 2.5 because I think a lot of people are a little bit skeptical of this Steelers offense, even though they've made the change at offensive coordinator. Let's go to the AFC South, though. The Colts are hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now. Over at DraftKings, we've seen our first 3 pop up. 2.5 pretty much across the board, but 3 over at DraftKings. 3 minus 102, total 45. That's what you've been waiting for?
I've been waiting for it. I thought for sure it was going to happen. I mean, look, the Bucs are beat up. They've got a bunch of injuries. You know, I thought for sure it would come to fruition. Nobody was betting, as I've mentioned before, nobody was betting the Bucs all week long, right? You know, and you get that 3 sitting out there. It's kind of gives you a chance. But here's what I will say about this game. When Gardner Minshew faces teams, okay, this is kind of an interesting number. When Gardner Minshew faces an offense that can score points, and, you know, Tampa Bay, for whatever you think of Tampa Bay and Baker Mayfield, they can move the ball. Evans, Chris Godwin, they can move the ball. Rashard White might be hurt, which might be a good thing, because then they won't keep trying to run the ball. They should just throw it, right? But when Minshew's opponents score more than 20 points in a game, they're 1-16 straight up. I don't see how, you know, the Bucs don't move the ball in this game. Now, here's the issue. The Bucs have played horrible defense the last 6 weeks. Horrendous. Mm-hmm. They've given up an average of 390 yards the last 6 games. They've forced just 6 turnovers. Now they're missing some players. But what Todd Bowles is going to do, he's going to get in that double sink look. He's going to get in that bare front. And he's going to say to Minshew, you're going to have to throw the ball to beat me. Vita Vea is going to be in there kicking butt over the center, trying to stop the run. And he's going to ask them to say, okay, you're going to have to make plays in the back end, passing the football. Can Minshew do that? We'll see.
And to your point, Tampa Bay 5-0 against the spread on the road this season, all as underdogs. And in those games, the under 4-1. in those games. So maybe it's a lower scoring affair, even though the total has been being bet to the over, open 41.5, now sits 45 across the board here. There's even a 45.5 out there as well. So a lot of people expecting points in this showdown over in Indianapolis. But I tend to agree with you. At three, it's hard not to have interest in Tampa, but those injuries, like we mentioned, Lavonte David, the linebacker, their leading tackler in Tampa, and then also Devin White, a little bit banged up as well. Then Jamel Dean, the corner, is already been ruled out of this game. So Tampa playing a little bit shorthanded on the defensive side of the ball, but Todd Bowles, one of the best defensive minds in football, might pose a formidable challenge to Gardner Minshew, Shane Steichen, and the Colts offensive attack. That does it for hour number one. Hour number two, we begin it in the city of brotherly love, talking Bills-Eagles here on Lombardi Live.